It is Monday, April the 30th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, is the North Korean leader sincere about recent concessions?
I don't get that the indicators are that strong. The key difference, of course, is that he now has nuclear weapons technology, but most pundits still remain concerned that he has more testing to do.
Might the U.S. pull out of the Iran nuclear deal?
We have to be patient and we have to be respectful to the Iran nuclear deal.
It was a landmark week at the White House, plus some good and sad news out of the world of music. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Officials in South Korea say North Korean leader Kim Jong-un plans to invite experts and journalists from the United States and South Korea when the country shuts down its nuclear test site in May. This news comes as President Trump presses for total denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula ahead of his own unprecedented meeting with Kim. For some perspective on all of this, VOA's Lori London asked Australian National University scholar John Blaxland about what came out of the inter-Korean summit between Kim and South Korean President Moon Jae-in, in which they agreed to move toward a nuclear-free Korean peninsula and a formal end to the Korean War of the early 1950s.
On one level, it's wonderful news. But the realist in me remains skeptical because we know that Kim Jong-un has been masterful at hiding and of preventing outsiders really understanding the breadth and depth of his schemes. And so when we hear that he's prepared to have inspectors come in, the question then is, well, to inspect what? And what's left off the list of inspected sites that could perhaps retain key capabilities or functions that enable the North Koreans to continue to produce nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles is not at all clear. And there are some compelling internal reasons why it would appear that Kim Jong-un is bluffing and that he is looking to strike a deal to get sanctions lifted to enable North Korea to get back on its feet economically without completely compromising its nuclear weapons and ballistic missile capability.
How do you think he would do that? Somewhat the same as he's done in the past, or that nation has done in the past?
Well, that's the thing. We have, since the end of the Cold War, on the basis of about once a decade, had a overture from the North to make some conciliatory gestures that will get sanctions lifted, trigger economic largesse from the United States and other parts of the West, and then once that's been delivered, to about face and renege on deals. That's the trajectory. That's the kind of modus operandi that we've got used to that Kim Jong-un learned from his father. So for that to be different now, I don't get that the indicators are that strong. The key difference, of course, is that he now has nuclear weapons technology, but most pundits still remain concerned that he has more testing to do, but that he probably can't get away with it at the moment without invoking further ire from the Trump administration, and with the support to a certain extent from China. So Kim Jong-un is playing the hand he has in his hand as best he can, and that means choosing this juncture as the point at which to make concessions and to reach out and to seek to strike a deal that leaves him with capabilities that will enable him to bounce back if he needs to, or when he needs to, shall we say, once he has got the concessions he seeks.
This upcoming meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Trump, do you believe that something will already be worked out before the two even meet?
I think there will be something worked out before they meet. But what we have seen with Kim Jong-un, and with President Trump for that matter, is that we should expect the unexpected. Even when we reflect on how Kim Jong-un behaved at Panmunjom the other day, the very act of bringing Moon Jae-in back across the border into North Korea, an unscripted piece of movement that spoke to Kim Jong-un's desire to call the shots, to play things his way. And I think that's to be expected in any negotiations that come up. So, of course, we know that President Trump has indicated he's not prepared to go ahead with a meeting unless it's a very clear plan for denuclearization. But what exactly does that mean? How rigorously is that imposed? And what options does that leave for Kim Jong-un to pursue subsequently? These are all very hard questions to answer at a summit.
It sounds a bit like this is sort of a calming down of tensions in the short term, but an uncertainty for anything long term and sustainable.
The thing is that it appears Kim Jong-un now has a effective deterrent capability. Nuclear weapons, ICBMs, the combination with combined with the fact that the United States has, you know, up to 230,000 citizens living in South Korea, really do make it virtually impossible for the United States to take the kind of retributive action it took against Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi in the past. Those really aren't viable options. So what do you do? You try and strike a deal short of that while still threatening to act like, you know, the madman that theorists posit Trump is trying to play, to intimidate and to cajole a concession that will satisfy President Trump's imperatives for a big deal, a deal that will make him look like he's successful.
Right. And of course, President Trump has been over the weekend sort of patting himself on the back for all this has achieved so far. It seems a bit premature.
The president has been patting himself on the back about incidents and actions that are really not necessarily of his own doing. Kim Jong-un called many of these shots. Kim Jong-un tested the nuclear weapons, fired the ballistic missiles, called for a summit. Moon Jae-in is the other key player here that has been instrumental in seeking reconciliation. And of course, China has been instrumental as well. So while President Trump claims the credit, there's really credit to be shared around. And that's all well and good while things are going swimmingly. Success has 1,000 fathers, they say. But if this unravels, it will be very clear where the blame will lie. And that will be on President Trump and Kim Jong-un.
That's John Blaxland, a professor at Australian National University and head of the ANU Strategic and Defense Studies Center. He was speaking with my colleague, Lori London. This is VOA.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. America's top diplomat is talking tough in the Middle East, his first foreign trip since taking up the post. Robert Berger reporting now from Jerusalem.
Iran topped the agenda as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo visited key U.S. allies in the Middle East, including Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Jordan. His first stop was the Saudi capital, Riyadh.
Iran destabilizes this entire region. It supports proxy militias and terrorist groups. It is an arms dealer to the Houthi rebels in Yemen, and it supports the murderous Assad regime as well.
Pompeo said it is unlikely that the United States will remain in the nuclear agreement between the world powers and Iran, which comes up for renewal on May 12th.
We will continue to work with our European allies to fix that deal. But if a deal cannot be reached, the president has said that he will leave that deal.
That position was welcomed by the Saudis and Israel, who see Iran as an arch enemy. Both countries say sanctions relief freed up billions of dollars for Iran to promote extremism and terror, and the deal strained relations between them and the Obama administration. Pompeo says times have changed.
Unlike the prior administration, we will not neglect the vast scope of Iran's terrorism. It is indeed the greatest sponsor of terrorism in the world, and we are determined to make sure it never possesses a nuclear weapon.
That was especially reassuring to Israel, which sees Iran's nuclear program as a threat to its existence. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
And as we just heard, Saudi Arabia and Israel were Mike Pompeo's stops on his first international trip as Secretary of State. VOA's Victor Beatty asked international security scholar Saeed Golkar of the University of Tennessee and the Chicago Council on Global Affairs about the choice of Saudi Arabia and Israel for stops on Pompeo's Middle East trip.
You know, I think actually it was very completely predictable that as a new Secretary of State, Pompeo tried to create an alliance between Israel, Saudi Arabia, and President Trump administration, all in the same front, trying to contain Iran and stop Iran nuclear program and push for more containment in terms of the regional and, Iran-Farian policy in the region. So he tried to, he visiting to the Saudi and Israel, was trying to bring everybody in the same front, how to can manage Iran, how to have to handle Iran officially. May 12 is coming, and President Trump should, renew the sanction waiver. There are a lot of speculation that President Trump is not going to do that. So what will be the next step? If Iran wants to walk away from the deal, or if Iran wants to stay in the deal and then, work with the European Union. I think that Trump actually tried to, manage all of the front, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the U.S. in the same page. And I don't know to what extent actually it was a successful trip.
Do you think that the May 12 deadline will come and the U.S. will decide to effectively reimpose sanctions?
I think actually there is a consensus among of the Iranian inside of Iran that the President Trump will walk away from the deal. Even, after President Macron, the French president, Merkel, the German chancellor, talking with the President Trump, still Iranian believe that the President Trump will walk away from the deal. I hope it's not the case because, it will make the situation more complicated. But this is a consensus among of the Iranians. If the U.S. don't, renew the sanction waiver and impose a new round of the sanction, what do we have to do in Iran? There are three different views in Iran. The first view among of the hardliners is you have to walk away. If President Trump impose a new sanction, we have to tear up the deal and, start our nuclear program. The second idea is we have to be patient and we have to be respectful to the Iran nuclear deal, not try to reiterate other, the European or the American. The third group believe that we have to continue the deal, we have to work with the European Union, but we shouldn't stop Iran-foreign relationship, Iran regional policy in the Middle East. We have to push our regional interest at the same time, way to see if European can compensate, the lack of the U.S. in the Iran deal, or if the European wants to continue the deal, or if the European wants to actually the U.S. impose a new sanction. So we have to wait.
On Syria, Mr. Pompeo suggested that he was in talks with Saudi Arabia, possibly helping share the burden in Syria. Is that a possibility that Saudi troops could be introduced into the Syrian conflict?
I really don't think so. If you look at the Saudi-Yemeni conflict for 3 years, the Saudi actually had a coalition with the other Islamic countries, but for 3 years they are not able to stop the literally barefoot Houthi in Yemen. So I think it's not really, a real option. The Saudi maybe can actually support financially, intelligence, strategically, but Saudi troops in Syria, I really don't think so.
That's Saeed Golkar, a non-resident senior fellow for Iran policy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He's also a visiting professor at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. And among many publications, Dr. Golkar also is author of the book Captive Society on Iran's paramilitary force and the securitization of Iranian society. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. Last week was another landmark week in the presidency of Donald Trump. That story from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
We have a really great relationship.
President Trump meeting with German Chancellor Angela Merkel, winding up yet another busy, if not chaotic, week at the White House. Trump eagerly embraced a report from Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee that found no collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia.
It was a great report. No collusion, which I knew anyway. No coordination, no nothing. It's a witch hunt. That's all it is. There was no collusion with Russia, if you can believe this one.
Earlier in the week, Trump bonded with French President Emmanuel Macron during a formal state visit.
It's going to be an outstanding president, one of your great presidents.
and it's an honor to call you my friend. Thank you.
Trump's choice for Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, finally won Senate confirmation this past week, but there were setbacks as well. Ronny Jackson withdrew as the president's nominee to head the Veterans Affairs Department. And there was also intense congressional scrutiny of embattled EPA chief Scott Pruitt, who is under fire for misspending government funds. It was another week of dramatic ups and downs that have become a regular feature of life under the nation's 45th president, says analyst Jim Kessler.
I don't think it's that he thrives on chaos. He creates chaos. And this is what the White House has been about, and this is what Washington has been about.
In addition to the Russia probe, led by special counsel Robert Mueller, the legal problems confronting Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, continue to cast a shadow over the administration. John Fortier is with the Bipartisan Policy Center in Washington.
It's a up-and-down week. It's always a very exciting time with Donald Trump, but certainly the circus atmosphere of the appointments and the scandal is often coming back into play.
Trump is hoping that good news about improving relations between North and South Korea and his close friendship with Macron will overshadow the setbacks, says Jim Kessler.
Trump felt good about, you know, bonding with Macron, and Macron elevated himself on the world stage. So in that way, this was a good week for Donald Trump, despite all the bad things that happened to him.
Ever the showman, Trump also found time to lead a tour for the children of White House reporters this week, a reminder that this president enjoys being both center stage and at the center of the political storm. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And still ahead on International Edition, the sounds of Gloria Estefan. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
All forms of multicellular life here on Earth begin with just a single cell. From this one cell springs a stream of specialized cells that go on to serve needed functions to create and keep a new life form alive. This complex process is one of nature's greatest mysteries. But now, scientists from the Harvard Medical School and Harvard University say they have tracked the process of how one cell is built into a more complex life form. The researchers used single-cell sequencing technology to meticulously outline individual cells in developing zebra fish and frog embryos over the first day of life. This allowed them to build a detailed roadmap of how multicellular life can be built from one solitary cell. The researchers' findings were described in three studies that were published in the journal Science. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. We begin this segment with some sad news out of the world of music. New Orleans-born saxophonist Charles Neville, who once backed up B.B. King, has died. He later gained fame performing for three decades with his brothers, Aaron, Art, and Cyril, as the Grammy-winning Neville Brothers Band. They're known for their unique blend of funk, jazz, and rhythm and blues. Charles Neville died from a long battle with pancreatic cancer. He was 79. Now a bit more from the world of music. Gloria Estefan is a Cuban-American singer, songwriter, actress, and accomplished businesswoman. She started off her career as the lead singer in the group called Miami Latin Boys, which eventually was known as the Miami Sound Machine. Live for Loving You was a super hit for Estefan and her husband Emilio Estefan and the Sound Machine.
Oh, I wonder why.
Born in Havana, Cuba in 1957, Gloria Estefan sings pop music, sometimes with a significant Caribbean flair. Many of her songs became international hits with chart-topping scores. She has sold an estimated 100 million records worldwide, including 31.5 million in the United States alone. Rhythm Is Gonna Get You is one of those chart toppers for Estefan. Gloria Estefan has won 3 Grammy Awards, has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and in 2015 she received the Presidential Medal of Freedom for her contributions to American music and received the Kennedy Center Honors in December 2017 for her contributions to American culture life. Part of her life is simply her family. Estefan became romantically involved with the Miami Sound Machine's bandleader Emilio Estefan in 1976. As she later revealed, he was my first and only boyfriend. They married in 1978 and have a son, Naive, and a daughter, Emily. The family lives on Star Island. That's a neighborhood of South Beach in the city of Miami Beach on a man-made island in Biscayne Bay, Florida. Often find Gloria Estefan in the Miami Sound Machine is out performing for their fans, and always on that playlist is Get On Your Feet. And I remember when that song first came out, everybody I knew who used to run and dance, jump up and down in the gym and do exercising and stuff, had Gloria Estefan singing Get On Your Feet. Oh, it was wonderful, huh? Hey, listen, many thanks for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you here. Up next, we'll have the latest world news for you, so we hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, John Ellison, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a super Monday. Now a bit more from Gloria Stefan.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the recent release of the State Department's annual report on human rights practices, John Sullivan, who was serving as U.S. Acting Secretary of State, pointed to Iran as one of the countries with an egregious record.
The Iranian people continue to suffer at the hands of their leaders. The right of peaceful assembly and freedoms of association and expression are the legitimate expectation of all individuals worldwide. Unfortunately, for the Iranian people, these human rights are under attack almost daily.
The State Department report noted the repression of nationwide protests in Iran that began on December 28, 2017, and the severe restrictions on religious freedom in the country, including the continued repression of the Baha'i community. The report also cited the Iranian government's disproportionate targeting of ethnic minority groups, including Kurds, Azeris, and Baluchis, for arbitrary arrest, prolonged detention, and physical abuse. Government harassment and prosecution of publishers, editors, and journalists were reported as well, in addition to restriction of access to the Internet. The report also noted that Iranian women remain subject to broad governmental discrimination in law and practice. In his preface to the report, Mr. Sullivan warned that states like Iran that violate their citizens' human rights and restrict their fundamental freedoms are forces of instability. Our foreign policy, he declared, promotes freedom as a matter of principle and interest. The United States will continue to support those around the world struggling for human dignity and liberty.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
From Washington.